The Outlet. The voice of Central.
Welcome to The Outlet. I'm your host, Brent Harbour. In this podcast, we delve into the complexities of the Land and Water Regional Plan with Councillor Gary Kelleher. We explore how this plan impacts the livelihoods of farmers and the community, the recent shifts in perspective, and the ongoing debate surrounding its implementation.
Local voices, local info, The Outlet, the voice of Central.
G'day, Gary. Welcome to The Outlet podcast.
G'day, Brent. Thanks for having me.
Now, could you explain a bit about the Land and Water Regional Plan and how that would affect the livelihoods of farmers and more in the area if it went ahead?
For the Otago Regional Council, you know, regional councils have to have this hierarchy of documents that sit under the RMA. And so they have a regional policy statement, and then underneath that, there are your regional plans. And so Otago hasn't had a land plan as such. It's had a plan for water and a plan for air, and it's been pretty slack in sort of updating its plans. So it needs to update a regional policy statement every 10 years, I think it is, and then the plans need to be updated to match that. So across, say, the last 10 years for the Otago Regional Council, it's had some major changes from what was a very sort of staid position, I suppose, with a long-standing chief executive, to then having two subsequent chief executives who were from outside the region. And really, it changed direction at that point. It moved away from being a council that understood its regions and had, you know, staff out interacting and closely associated with what happened out around the regions, to a council that become very Dunedin-centric and very much wanting to impose central government direction. And so the land and water plan that's appeared has followed a sort of previous plan, which was all about a fixed-based policy. And the land and water plan, as currently drafted, is a major change. It really, how do I describe it? It kind of takes regional activity and says, well, really, there's an awful lot to fix here. So this plan has to fix it, which is wrong.
Yeah, exactly. The thing for you too is, I mean, you run a farm and you do a whole lot of businesses. So this really helps your perspective because you know what the effects are for what you do, right?
Oh, exactly. And so I look at how I operate my farm, and then I've got, you know, sort of water associated businesses. I've got a quarry activity that we do, and I'm sort of involved in governance. So I've got a sort of wide spread of activity that I undertake. And I just look at the mix around the table at the council because, you know, really a council should be governed by council. And so policy should be set, but it really is directed by the staff. And so then it's down to the governors to challenge the staff. And I've come into it, like, this is my sort of third term now, and it's my second subsequent term. I missed a term. And I always only ever wanted to do three terms, but then I'd possibly do one more, I think. And it's just about, where is the understanding that sits around the table? Because you get elected there, you know, and you go into it with a multiple layer of hats on that you need to apply. And looking at the dynamics around the table of the OIC, then, you know, there's some councillors that have been there for 20-something years, you know, and so it's a career for them. So they just keep standing, they keep getting re-elected. But it's really interesting to watch how they function at the table. And, you know, my background from, you know, sort of my external roles is around governance, and I was a member of the Institute of Directors. And I think I've got a reasonable understanding of what good governance is. And what I see at the ORC table is a very determined sort of perspectives brought to the table to influence direction that's not really relative to what's happening out on the ground.
And I think you're kind of surprised when you get onto the council and things, you don't realise how much is involved, right? And what you're fighting against sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And you could go into it and say, well, I'm only going to go to the statutory meetings that we have to go to, which is sort of every fortnight. And then you could choose to do nothing else and you still be meeting the absolute basics of the role. But I view it as far more than that. And so, you know, you need to be out. And I cover a big area, and it gets quite frustrating in a way because we have, you know, there's three councillors for my area, which is all of Central Otago District Council, Queensland Lakes District Council. So I have a need to be across my Central Otago area, but also across the Queenstown Lakes area, and it's quite big. I haven't gone out to groups and that across these regions and said, you know, I really want to come to your meetings. I've sort of left it that, well, you invite me to your meeting if you want me there. I'm not going to make your meeting go from 8 o'clock till 12 o'clock just because I've demand that I must come along and talk to you about stuff that I think I should be talking about. If you want me there, then I'll come and I'll make every effort I can to be there. And so, you know, I hear often from, say, Alexa Forbes in Queenstown, where she says, well, you know, it's only her in Queenstown. She's got to cover the whole region herself. But it's a bit unfair because, you know, I'm up there too. It's just as councillors, we don't go on teams. We go to what we're either invited to or we go looking for.
And with the land and water regional plan, I've seen there's a bit of a shift in perspective recently. I mean, some of the experts, even some ORC members, are recognising the importance of balancing river health and the agricultural activity. So what do you think's helped change their viewpoint, Gary?
It's a tough one because, yeah, there's a real division in the council at the moment across the councillors. So 7 are, of the 12 are absolutely determined that the land and water plan, as it's currently drafted, needs to be notified. And so then there's 5 who are, of which I'm one of, who are saying, well, no, it'll be an absolute disaster for Otago if that is the case. I think as it's become, you know, there's been a lot of stakeholder engagement that the staff have undertaken, and it's all tailored in a way of, you know, this plan must proceed, and it is the baby of the previous government. There's an absolute determination. I think the stakeholders themselves have potentially, some of the true ramifications of it, they're starting to say, well, actually, this will have issues for us. And, you know, one example is, say, for my local river, the Manuhirikia, the plan doesn't really enable or actually allow in-stream dams anymore. So any new in-stream dams won't happen or would be almost an impossibility to make happen. Now, the council has done that knowing that this catchment intends to build a new dam at the head of the catchment, has done at a site where there's an existing dam, but needs to build a new one in front of it. So while the council have known that, the staff have drafted a draft policy that would basically remove the ability for that. And so, you know, it knows there needs to be more water storage. There's national direction towards more water storage across the country. And so it's almost like all of this, the known stuff that needs to happen, is being actively worked against. And I think some of the stakeholders are starting to say, well, actually, hang on, that could actually be really bad for the region as opposed to better.
Because sometimes you'll do these things thinking you're having the right outcome, but you actually create more problems for yourself, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And I think you got to look at the dynamics of, because you'd immediately say, like, I've just explained that, and you, to anyone listening, would be thinking, well, how on earth could that happen? You know, you've got a whole grouping of staff who are interacting with the community. They go out, they do their engagement, they go to the sessions, they hold the community sessions, they're told all this stuff. So why would that be there? You know, councils have really changed. The staffing dynamics have changed over the, you know, the past couple of decades, where what you had, especially in regional councils, which evolved from catchment boards, where you had long-standing staff who had a you know, huge background of experience out on the ground. And in the recent decade, a lot of those staff have left. They've either left because of age, or they've left because of frustration. They've left because of changes that have happened either within their council or from dictated from central government. And the problem with that is that you've lost all that background knowledge, that when something absolutely ludicrous is sort of thrown on the table, instead of all the noddies who are sitting around the table saying, oh, yes, that's excellent, because that's what we were taught at university 2 years ago, there's no one there to say, hang on, that's just dumb, and sort of haul it back into line, and this is the reasons why. And then so these things start seeing the light of day. So then they start getting engaged with the stakeholders through what is, you know, the pieces of the formal part that council has to do. And then as a land and water plan like ours reaches the very formal part, which is notification, it's into a legal process. And that then means that stakeholders or community have to invest themselves. They've got to spend their own time and their own money to try and turn this stuff around, whereas in the past it would have been turned around back at the council or the council table or the staff room table.
Yeah, so it's just another layer in there, isn't it, when you have that?
Oh, it certainly is. But the scary thing is that some of this will see the light of day if it's allowed to proceed. And this is what I think the new government has, you know, come out very strongly with, because in the build-up to the election, you know, they weren't hiding in caves. They were out talking around the region, and they got themselves in a very well-informed position on what was working and what wasn't working. And it was pretty clear across, say, Otago that for, you know, water use, for farming, for forestry, there were a lot of things that were looking incredibly scary into the future if councils were left to proceed the way they are. And And for the likes of our land and water plan, if it does reach notification in its current state, which the seven councillors are determined that it will, then the community then has to fight it and prove to commissioners why. So it's a step closer to some of that being embedded. And that's quite scary.
Yeah. So despite the recent recommendations to delay the plan, the council actually voted to continue with it. So what influenced that decision, and what do you think of the implications, Gary?
Oh, it's a totally politically influenced decision, very cunningly orchestrated by the staff. And so the staff know that they've got a majority of councillors sitting around the table who will proceed with the direction they put in front of them if it's matching this supposed environmental massive uplift that must happen. And so that's what's happened, is this divide is, and it's almost unchangeable in a way, because you've got the chair and deputy chair who I believe were in an agreement with each other, that because the deputy chair is a dairy farmer, he's been involved in a catchment group in Tapanui, and as I understand it, that's had some really positive outcomes. But my word, the rural sector at the moment are looking at the deputy chair saying, well, good grief, you're a dairy farmer. You're a farmer elected to there to represent our interests alongside everyone else's. And, it looks like you've sort of shoved all the agricultural interests into a box and put a bloody great big padlock on it. And you're just following down the ideological route. And so that is, it's very disappointing in a way, because you should be there with all your sort of hats on and hats off and be looking at what's best for everything. So just then what has then happened is the staff know that they can put up sort of policy proposals that have got a majority. All they've got to do is show them that these policy proposals are sort of more environmentally leaning, and they know that there's a majority of seven that are going to back it. And then the chief executive just says, I just work with council direction. And so when it comes to the new government saying, well, we're changing things, so we would like you to put your plan on hold, please. And so what, under the previous government, our council would have said, oh, yes, absolutely, and would have done it immediately. Under the new government, and of course, it's sort of really pushing away from the directions that council wanted to go, it's removing ideology and actually wanting some facts to be part of this. Yeah, then, oh, geez, no, we need to fight this at all cost. And so that's what they're doing. So the minister, has given very clear, as really clear as most of Otago's very clear rivers. The minister's direction could have been at the bottom of any of those rivers and you'd clearly read it. That, this plan, they don't want to burden the ratepayers with very protracted, very expensive, very legal processes when they are changing the plan, changing the direction. And then they want, all of this engagement to be done on the plan that is going to be proposed. And so, and that's not that far away. So the crazy thing about it is that the council are hell-bent on, it's now October, that the justification for that and that extension wasn't about the minister's direction. It was about allowing just a slight bit more time for the staff to get their own position in place. And then, so they're determined to lodge or notify this in October. And then so Otago's community has to engage on a plan that actually doesn't fit with the recently released RPS, which was a shambles as well, which is a regional policy statement. And it doesn't fit with the direction the government's signalling. So then government's scrambling to change its direction, and yet we're sort of almost bulldozing ahead to try and beat it.
There's a lot in motion with this, isn't there?
Oh, look, it is. And it's a very frustrating situation to sit in as one of the five, because you know that all you're doing is burdening your already burdened ratepayers. It was really interesting. We councillors did a tour in North Otago a few weeks ago and did a meeting up there, and it was great. We try and get out across the region and hold our meetings in different places. And we're standing on a dairy farm, and so part of the plan proposes that a cow limit of 2.5 cows per hectare. And at the moment, this farm, I think, was doing 3.2 cows per hectare. So we're standing there with the dairy farmers, and so I asked the question, what's the difference for you between 3.2 to 2.5? And these poor farmers who had just spent sort of the last 15 minutes explaining how they absolutely hate red tape and grief and paperwork that they have to do just to be able to farm, said, well, it basically just totally screws us. And then the chair leapt and said, oh, yeah, but you'll just get a consent for the extra sort of 0.7 that you need. in a manner that as if a consent sits on a shelf at New World, and while you're in there getting your shopping, you also just collect a consent and you pass it through the checkout and you've got it. You know, that consent might take 2 or 3 years to get. You'll fight probably every stakeholder on the way, and then what you'll get is something that might reflect what you need, but it'll have conditions attached to it, and one of them will probably be you'll be back doing that all again in a few years' time. And so, you know, the whole thing is totally flawed, and luckily central government recognise it, but yeah, changing councils is going to be a big task for them.
So, I mean, looking ahead, what do you think, you know, are the steps that need to be taken by the council to ensure that the Land and Water Regional Plan reflects the needs and interests of the region?
Well, in my mind, I think just running with the direction that central government has given first, so that you're not just, you know, sort of destroying the souls of your ratepayers and costing them money at the same time and then forcing them through a legal process twice. And I don't know how the commissioners for that would even handle it, because they will also know that government is changing direction. So within councils, we will need democracy to remain. So a solution is not to put commissioners in, because, you know, I think more and more our ratepayers are going to look for councillors to be taking the situations to the council table. So I think that's absolutely critical. It is just going to take more detailed direction from central government to its expectations. And, you know, councils have grown. Like the ORC at the moment is nearly 350 staff. You know, and then year on year, it's been looking for massive rates increases. And I've voted against the last one because it's just horrific. But, you know, a key is going to be about limiting the extent that councils can grow to. You know, because they haven't grown in people who are actually out doing practical things on the ground. They've grown in people who are out potentially looking for issues that they can haul people or haul ratepayers up on and manage bureaucracy. And, you know, there's activities that we do that the bureaucratic management of it takes 1.5 times the actual doing of the activity. You look at that, when those numbers start coming to us, I started, you need a wall behind you that you can get up and bang your head against a few times to, you know, and that is why I think councillors, we need to be doing an awful lot more. And it's, but you know, we unfortunately we get portrayed in the, certainly in our very left-wing media at the moment, you know, all we're doing really is just fighting amongst ourselves. We aren't. We're taking the sentiments of our community to the table.
That's important. I mean, that's what you're elected for, right? That's why people vote for you.
Exactly. Yes. And I have to be there too. You know, there are some negative things happening in rural agriculture and other activities that, you know, I've got to be there and listen to all of that too and be able to portray that and look at solutions for that as well. But what I don't cope with is when the wrong message that, you know, agricultural people or foresters or whatever are portrayed as being, you know, totally negligent towards the environment, because I know that's not the case. And certainly in the last 10 years, some of the work that's been done is amazing across some of these properties. And it's almost like it's irrelevant. You know, those seven councillors will still speak against that as there's much more to fix. And that's insignificant.
I mean, the thing is, you know, as somebody who works on a farm, you're trying to look after it, right? It's not in your best interest to have it all marked up, is it?
No, absolutely not. And I think my philosophy of the farm is possibly mirrored by many others, that, you know, we don't want to be super intensive. You know, we need to be a viable business. You know, we need to be able to show that we are making a profit year on year. We won't be making a profit this year, that's for sure. You know, but my philosophy has always been that my businesses need to pay tax. And in my mind, that's a really good indicator of just, you know, how well is your business doing. You know, but we also need to improve the environment as we go, and we always want to be progressive, but I just don't want to be super intensive. And, you know, I want to do what best matches my region here, and we're incredibly dry. We're only 350 mils of rain a year, and you get it when you least need it. This year, there's a theory that Central Otago never lets you down in farming, but geez, it really did this year. So, you know, it's been a very tough one, but you get that, and you've got to be able to farm for what will be the norm.
Well, hey, listen, Gary, it's been really wonderful talking to you. Thanks for all the work that you are doing. I know you've got a lot on your plate, but I'm sure people are very supportive of you getting in there and fighting for the good. So thanks so much.
No, look, thanks very much, and I'm happy to have a chat anytime.
On Buzzsprout, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, The Outlet,
the voice of Central.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Outlet. Now, if you have a story or an interview you think should be featured on The Outlet podcast, get in touch by clicking on the Contact Us button on the Central app. The Outlet is produced and published by the Central App and supported with funding from the New Zealand Public Interest Journalism Fund. The Outlet is available on the main page of the Central App and wherever you get your podcasts.